Accession number 28653, Mr. Francis Lucas, Reel 8. Now, we were talking about the mud when you were alive, that this was a new problem.
It was indeed a new problem.
Tell me a bit more about this.
Well, it just almost immobilised you, and with the vehicle slithering about, etc., having to get out and to push again, and you couldn't get yourself out of it as you could in the desert with the sand tracks. And it was an absolute pest. And then, in addition, there was another situation, and that was the fact that the local people, the boys and girls and folk, were out and about, and you'd lost completely your privacy. And
what do you mean? Why were they a nuisance?
Well, put it like this, and put it fairly bluntly, there were no special provisions for the necessary relief we had to take from time to time. In the desert, of course, and in Africa generally, that was no problem. But now, if you tried to vanish off to a secluded spot with a shovel over your shoulder, then you had half a dozen kids following you to see what you're up to. And that used to irritate our lads beyond measure. And it wasn't until, of course, we got in situations where we were there long enough to erect proper toilet facilities that was overcome. And these were things you just didn't expect, and so on. And they could be real irritants, etc. But, my goodness, the people again, it's hard to believe that we apparently been fighting the Italians previously, and now they just couldn't be friendly enough. And if there are a few of you in a wine shop and some Italian soldiers came in, the fact you were both at Alamein meant something you embraced each other about. The fact, you're Alamein too, were you? And so on. And again, language seemed to, they could speak more English than we could Italian. We're always bad at languages, we English people. But soon we were able to communicate very well indeed. And they were hospitable again to a degree.
Now, this is where you start to get compo rations, is it? Was that the first time you got them here? Because you first time you mentioned them?
No, we did have compo rations in the desert, but no, they were the main source.
Now, could you just explain for them what compo food rations are? Because
Well, a box of compo rations would be a container with a wide range of tinned rations of spam and beef and vegetables, etc. And each box of compo rations, if I remember rightly, was sufficient for, I think, 5 men for a week. I think that was about 5 for a week. And did indeed contain quite a balanced collection. They were sourced from America, of course. It was their idea. And it meant to say that you were independent of a cookhouse and that you could be self-sufficient. But at the same time, when it was convenient, independent cookhouses were nevertheless set up. But the compo rations were there for standby and emergency use. And I must pay tribute to the Americans that they really did this in style. And they were quite a good and varied diet.
Now, when you first landed, you seem to have gone into an orchard. Fairly near the beach, really. I mean, the bridgehead wasn't really large still, I think, then. And then it started to break out. What do you remember of the initial fighting? I know, as usual, you're you have another job to do in the rear, so you're doing your job, I presume. But what do you remember of this period?
At this period, the main thing was the change in communications, in physical communications. You are now restricted and limited by roads. Before, of course, you had the most of the time open land, open desert. You made your own roads and tracks. But now you are subject to traffic jams, to being jammed on the roads, not quite knowing where you're going, and not being possible to take shortcuts. And communication, therefore, was a much bigger problem than ever it had been before. And it proved to be very, very restrictive, and so on.
Now, so what do you remember about what happened? You start moving forward, you go to Salerno itself, you know, and start moving towards Naples when it falls in start of October or back end of September, I'm not sure which.
Yeah.
What do you remember? Just take us through what you remember of it, really.
What I remember about Naples, when we came into Naples, in particular, there was a water shortage. And we discovered that several depots where there had been supplies of bottled water and so on had been broken into by the local populace, and they were just taking these cartons of water, etc. We wondered at first what they're after, because we had no water problems ourselves, of course. And it was really obviously a big problem for the local people. And I was very, very conscious of that. Again, in Naples, it was full of activity, one way and the other. We were welcomed there, no doubt about that, which seemed to be so very illogical. When I remembered that at that stage we were still supposed to be involved in hostilities. But the local people obviously seemed to have no time for it, no interest in it. They were hospitable, and the girls were friendly, as you might gather. And it was ridiculous, in a way, to think you're supposed to be at war.
Now, what happens next then?
Eventually, we came to the area of Sorrento, and our own units were located in the Bay of Sorrento and Amalfi. Around that lovely area, today a most popular holiday area, with the Vesuvius away in the background, just gently smoking, and out in the bay, the Isle of Capri, etc., an idyllic place. And there, my own unit settled down very, very happily, and integrated with the local populace, etc. There were problems with the military police. Apparently, some of the local people, the flyboys, if you like, had been taking advantage in one way and another, and gently doing a bit of pilfering of army supplies, and some banks have been robbed, and so on. And these things were happening and going on. And our military police tended to come down fairly strongly. And I remember, too, that in the little village place, I forget its name, where I was stationed, that there are problems with the military police there, who, strangely enough, were following up complaints that the local shops had put up their prices to exorbitant amounts. And they, in conjunction with the local Italian police, were trying to clamp down on this. And I remember a family we're very, very friendly with, an Italian family. Their husband had been arrested on a bit of a trumped-up charge because he overcharged in his shop, and I got involved in trying to get him released, which didn't work out very well. So we became involved very much with the local people. Our forward troops, of course.
This is in November, I should have said mid-November.
Yes. Our forward troops, of course, have been pushing up under very different conditions to which we've been used to, and we're meeting a problem in the area of Monte Cassino, which caused them to halt. And we're now coming towards autumn and winter, and again, the conditions were such that travel was very, very difficult to move around, etc.
Now, there were rumours that you were going home, in fact, even before you got to Sorrento. And what about this business of, that you were going back to England, well, to the UK?
Well, rumours are rumours, and by this time, I think the lads were very, very keen to get back home, if at all possible, and these rumours continued to circulate and did cause some measure of anticipation that they would literally happen, that we really would be going home. We gathered that we'd go home for a purpose. We didn't know what, that something else must be happening if we're going to be sent home. And so there was a purpose in it, etc.
And but you didn't think of the Second Front at the time?
No. We had no idea of what it might be. None whatever. And certainly not there would be the so-called Second Front in Normandy. That was much, much later after we were home.
Now, what preparations were made once it was confirmed? Because you had to hand over your gear, didn't you? Well, it seemed all a bit complicated to the Canadians from the looks of it.
That's right. We're being replaced by the Canadians, and they came, and there was an inventory of the items that were handed over. We had to list all our main tools and other equipment, and so on, and they were signed for them. And eventually, of course, we were there with just no equipment, no transport, nothing at all. It was all handed over to the Canadians. And then shortly after, we embarked. Strangely enough, I remember very little about leaving.
There seems to be a gap between handing over the equipment and leaving. You seem to have been in Sorrento nearly 4 weeks after you handed, just doing nothing. Your diary is mainly blank.
Exactly.
It says quiet day a lot.
Simply entertained by the local people. From that point of view, it was sort of just socializing and staying with local people.
Now, did you, I believe you did, but can I check, did you attend local churches? I mean, they'd be Roman Catholic, I presume, but did you make an
Oh, yes, indeed. Out of courtesy, if for no other reason, we would indeed go with the local families to their church, etc. And that was strange to us, an entirely different form of worship, but most of us would go because it was courteous so to do, but we're very happy to do that.
What did you think of it? It's very different from Baptist upbringing.
Oh, absolutely.
Roman Catholic. And
yeah, and Italian, Italian churches would be different anyway to our Roman Catholic churches over here. We could follow very, very little, I suppose, the liturgy, and were just in any activity you had to be involved in, etc., just follow what the others were doing. And as a matter of friendship and courtesy, you would go with them, and
did,
so on.
Did you get much yourself spiritually out of it, or was it just too different, too strange for you?
Oh, it was too different, too completely different atmosphere. And so, you, shall I say, as an observer, you perhaps found the atmosphere and that interesting and so on, but in spiritual terms, not surprisingly, not very meaningful to you yourself. But then, on the other hand, your faith and activities at that time would have meant very little to your hosts there. And so one just accepted that situation.
Now, one thing is, you got news that you'd been awarded a decoration, a British Empire Medal, I think, military division.
Yes, news of that had news of that had drifted through. As a matter of fact, the first I knew about it was a letter from Dillis, my wife, who was living in Bath at the time, and said in the Bath paper it was announced that you had been awarded this decoration. And so I immediately wrote back to her and I said, I know nothing about it. There is some mistake, and so don't take any notice of it. But in due course, that did become a fact. And then again, subsequently, was it again before I left, I became aware of the mentioned dispatches, which I'd also been awarded. The British Empire Medal turned out to be primarily as a result of technical work and the work on the mine detector. The mentioned dispatches, I just never knew what it was for. I asked for clarification and they said there's no information as to why it was awarded.
Did it mean much to you, the BEM, the mentioned dispatches? Or
Not really at that time. No, I don't think so. You just had a sort of, wow, would you believe it kind of thing. But I don't think so. Not.
Now you seem to have got on very well with the Italians in Sorrento. Mr. Pasterno, he's the chap who was arrested.
Oh, yes.
His family and the other. Can you talk a bit about your relationship with the Italians there? Because it does seem to have been very close.
It was indeed. We became really quite an extension of their family. And the meals they were put on, I remember, absolutely fantastic. And the daughters were very attentive, in this case in the proper way. But I remember I did make a psychological error, which I may mention those notes in a letter to Dillis. On one evening, when a whole lot of us were being entertained by the Pasterna family and their friends, the girls there would depip the grapes and literally feed them to us, and so on. And, of course, we lads just enjoyed that, obviously. Rather unwisely, I mentioned that in the course of a letter to my wife, Dillis, and I had a rather scathing response in due course, and realised that psychologically I committed a stupid error of indiscretion, etc., etc. But they were hospitable to a degree, and of course, fruit was the main thing. There was ample fruit about, and they knew how to use it in such a variety of ways. And we were pampered and spoiled, which I well remember.
Now, you actually have a sort of leaving due, because you're leaving round about the 18th, 19th of December, the back end of the year, in fact. You know, what do you remember about the leaving and the sort of trip back?
Again, surprisingly, memories about the facts of that are not as clear, strangely enough, as other events. I'm not even sure where we embarked or where we went by train. And quite frankly, I don't remember where we embarked from.
It says Naples on the Cameronia, but...
Oh, yes.
That's yes. 20th of December, but you don't remember the voyage back.
I don't really remember very, very little about it, which is strange, really. But certain things impress on your memory. I think, actually, you get the situation where after a campaign like that, you let your mind just go into freewheel and just relax. Etc. My guess is I spent a lot of time reading and so on. And it's about a 12-day trip, I think.
Yeah, you seem to have got back, just early in January, from the look of it.
Yes.
Very early in January 1944.
That's right.
So what happens when you get back to England?
Right, get back to England. We had a few days leave. Not very many, I think 4 or 5 days leave. And then at least my unit, was sent up into the Norfolk area to a place I think called Swaffham. And we had a camp there in Swaffham, etc.
Now, what was your leave like? I mean, you must have missed your wife, Dillis. I mean, was it nice to get back? I mean, or did you feel strange after being away for a year?
Yes. It did take a while to adjust, quite frankly. But you soon did adjust. And what happened, too, was the fact that, again, in the North Swaffham area, you soon got friendly with the local people, and it wasn't long before Dillis was invited to come up and stay with the family there, as I had a sleeping out pass and so on, and so we were able to have be reunited for a time. And that was, of course, good. And it was a while before we became aware of what the next project would be, before we became aware that there was some plan to invade over in France, but where, of course, we didn't know.
Now, there's one thing we've missed out, and that is, I've just seen a note, and it's not mentioned in your diaries, part of the reason you got an award was your initiative in arranging emergency power supplies for bogged down tanks around Montreux.
Oh, yes, I've forgotten that.
Can you just we just talk about that, because I think it's important we do recall that. Sounds interesting. Tell me about that.
Yes. Well, the problem was this. It's well known there was a big hold-up in the area of Monte Cassino, and our tanks were massed there. They were unable to travel to move forward or to move back. They were simply stuck there. It was still essential to maintain communications, and they relied upon their tank batteries, of course. Very soon, it was a question of running their engines simply to charge the batteries, and that was very inefficient where the use of fuel was concerned, because again, supplies of fuel were difficult. And so I was advised of this problem and thought there must be some solution to it. And so we did manage to catch hold of a couple of petrol-driven generators, which we had at our back. And the idea was to get the tank batteries back, charge them, and return them. But that caused problems in getting the batteries out of the tank. And then by chance one day, and I forget how, there was a railway line not so far from our camp, and a number of shot up carriages on the line. And I was walking around there with a couple of my lads, and with the carriages on their side, the batteries that supplied lighting for the carriages were revealed. And I realized that amazingly, they were about twice the physical size of the standard tank battery, and twice the voltage. The tank battery was 12 volts, and these were 24 volts. And so I thought, wow, we put those to some use. And so what I did, for a team of lads who went along the railways searching for crashed carriages and so on, taking the batteries out, bringing them back. Then we divided them and literally cut them down in half and put force ends on them and reduced them into 12-volt batteries, which were a perfect replacement for the tank battery. And so back at our base, we were able to charge them and send up truckfuls of them to replace the tank batteries, bring the tank batteries back, and charge those, and so on. And that did help what could have been a difficult situation. And to my surprise, I think, before I left Italy, I had, I suppose that was what the Metro Dispatches Award was for. I'm not sure. Anyway, there's some acknowledgement of this, that we did manage this. And it was simply a practical move for a practical situation.
And that had taken place while you were at Sorrento, was it, or was that earlier?
Yes, that was throughout that period. We were literally managing that and so on. Yeah.